You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Myth Creates Podcast. I'm Oren, and with me today is
Chris
and
Wes,
who is again our new co-host. We welcomed you already last week, Wes, but welcome again.
Thank you.
Now this episode's going to be really short, I think. Like very short, like under 10,000 words, I think. That's good. That's the cutoff for this episode.
So do you think that's like a good thing that it's so short?
It's easier for me. I have to record a shorter podcast.
That doesn't mean that it's necessarily good though, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very lazy, so you know. Yeah, so today we're talking about short stories, the pros and cons, and you know, the big, so generally speaking, a short story is anything up to 10,000 words, I think, is the general agreement. And of course different places have different definitions, but longer than that and you start to get into the novelette or novella range.
And I think if you start to get below 1,000 or 750, people start calling it flash.
Yeah.
I think, instead of, or short shorts. another name for, like, the super, super short stories.
Right, and below 200 is the itty-bitty fiction, and then, it's just...
micro. Isn't there, like, micro that's, like, 20 words, or there's something that's, like, under 100 words, maybe.
Yeah, the tweet fiction.
Tweet fiction.
So then you just get to, like, for sale children's shoes never used, and then everyone's just sad, but...
I think the for sale children's baby shoes never used, I think that... The famous six-word short story. It's only a short story. It only works because you're left to imagine what the story is. Like,
that's definitely what it does. But yeah, no, I was serious. One of the pros of short stories is that they are easier to write than novels. And so if you are a beginning writer, it's not like short stories are miniature novels. So if you are practicing short stories and then you start with novels, there are some new things you're going to have to learn. But in general, if you are a new writer, I would recommend starting with short stories, if for no other reason than they are easier to finish, and then you will have something, as opposed to like trying to start with your 200,000 word novel that if you're a new writer, you will probably never finish.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between easy to write and easy to finish, though. Just like they are easier, but they're not easier in proportion to how short they are.
That's true.
Like, I think,
yeah, that's a good point.
The shorter the story is, the harder it is per word, is what I would say. So they are disproportionately hard for their size, but even so, that it is still much less work. Like, even if you have to rewrite every paragraph a lot more because it has to be much more precise, overall, a 5,000 word short story is still going to be less work than a novel.
A novel also affords you a little bit of time to kind of like build up to stuff, and what you're saying about word economy is definitely important. You have to just, you don't have time to like have, you know, a lengthy introduction. You need to be in it like from the get-go so that people are like ready to go on your story. But yeah, less complicated in the sense that you probably, you know, you might not have as many characters. You shouldn't have as many characters to deal with. Right?
You can only hope.
But yeah, it's kind of just, you know, as long as we've had stories, we've also had short ones, and everybody throughout different, you know, centuries and ages have given their own bits of advice on short stories. And I thought I'd share some things that I just dug up with you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Interesting.
Yeah, please do.
Yes. Okay, so they've been popular, but they really got popular kind of towards the mid-late 19th century, when a lot of those, you know, big writers that you find in, you know, dead white guy books who are writing their big stories. But Edgar Allan Poe was probably one of the most prolific and well-known short story writers. And he actually wrote an essay called The Philosophy of Composition that was kind of a retort to something that Charles Dickens had wrote that kind of said,
Dickens versus Poe. Yeah, I'm into it.
Apparently they had like a pretty lengthy correspondence with Dickens, even like sending Poe a stuffed raven as like kind of a cheeky gift.
I ship it.
But the interesting thing about Poe, and the reason why he wrote this this philosophy of composition, was that he was reacting against other writers at the time that said that, oh, you know, we just sit down and just like write, which in like NaNoWriMo speak, the pantsers versus like the planners. And Edgar Allan Poe is very much a planner. And so when he sat down to write his short stories and his poems, and I'm mostly quoting here, he said that he prefers to commence with considering an effect. And that was always the point for short poems and short fiction for Edgar Allan Poe, is he thought that the point of a story was to experience something. And if you're writing a short story, the chance of that like effect coming across is much higher than in longer works, because you know the odds of you getting interrupted are shorter. So if it takes you 20 minutes to read a story, you're probably going to ideally achieve the intended effect. You're not going to get pulled out of it for any reason. You're not going to have to put it down for the night. And so that's why, like, for example, with his poem The Raven, he chose melancholy. Like, that was the emotion that he wanted to convey over the course of 100 lines. In his short story The Cask of Amontillado, he kind of wanted to convey this like slowly dawning horror, which, spoiler alert, like every time I've read it, which has been more than 10 times at this point,
oh, wow,
I still get chills when Fortunato screams at the end of that story, "For the love of God, Montresor," even though you know that Montresor gets away with the murder the entire time. Like, everything is kind of working to build to that moment, to that effect. And like, as a reader, I get that, like, quite viscerally. I get to like experience that, because I think the length helps me do that. I don't have time to like ponder or figure out the story ahead of time so much as like you can kind of talk through a novel and piece it out and remove yourself from it to think about how it's operating on a different level. And so I think it's an interesting idea that if you're wanting to try writing short stories, you know, there's certainly things to keep in mind with like plot and characters, but an effect is certainly an interesting approach. It's like, what feeling do I want to convey here? And how could I go about doing that? It's certainly an interesting idea.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. What it reminds me of, I think when people want to add messages and commentary to the work, I feel like the novel has enough length that you can approach any point that you're making from multiple perspectives and have like a whole discussion. But like the short story is really good for making a single point strongly. You know, if you just want to make one specific point, you're not trying to show multiple perspectives, you're not trying to have a discussion, you just want to show the importance of X, for instance. I think short stories are really good at doing that, because they can be much more one note than a novel can be. A novel has to have multiple feelings and ups and downs, but a short story can just like take one thing, such as one mood, as melancholy, and just hammer it really hard. And I think that does make them valuable. And also makes them, you know, really good ways to experiment, you know, for a new writer, because you can do like things like you can use, for instance, really strong style that you couldn't work for a whole novel. Like, it would get tiresome if you do it for an entire novel. But if you just do it for the length of a short story, then it's fine. So you can do, it's almost a lot more flexible. If you want to write, for instance, in second person or try other experimental viewpoints, or like, you know, short stories give you room to do that, whereas it would be really hard to get a popular novel that, you know, there are some novels that are in second person, but mm-hmm. that's substantially trickier than giving a short story in second person.
Yeah. And like, I think there's a reason that most of the really famous horror stories are short stories. And I think horror, it's, again, you can definitely do horror in a novel. I mean, The Southern Reach is probably my favorite novel ever. But it's much harder to do horror over a longer story, and you can just maintain the mood better in a shorter story, has been my experience. Poe and Lovecraft are certainly strong examples of that.
Yeah, I think horror in particular requires you have to almost, like, if you have a novel, you have to give it a lot more room to build, because there's only so far you can go. You can only get to terrifying, and then once you're at terrifying, it's hard to go past that, right? And, you know, and you can change things up, but I think it also requires a certain level of novelty that, for a short story, because it's so short, that it retains the novelty, whereas the novelty will wear off in a novel, and that makes it harder to sort of maintain the horror. And you can, you know, you need ups and downs, and you can switch things out. I'm sure there are things you can do, but with a short story, you don't really have to worry about that.
You know, I figured it would be easier to maintain the novelty in a novel, but, you know, what do I know?
Chris, a lot of the things that you just said hit on another thing that we can share from the late 19th into the early 20th century, because besides Edgar Allan Poe, Anton Chekhov, the Russian writer, is most known for his short stories and his plays as well. And he himself, in a lot of letters that he shared with friends and family, kind of had about six principles that he considered were appropriate for short stories. And so I'll just read these things out real fast for you guys. And if anything, I mean, we can definitely problematize a few of them, but I think they're interesting starting points for anybody who might be interested. So one, he says, absence of lengthy verbiage of political, social, economic nature. So probably like no crazy jargon is kind of what I assume.
Oh, is that what he means? Okay.
Is that what he means? Or is he anti-SJW? I mean, does he think that you shouldn't be too heavy with your handed with your message? So I'm wondering if that sociopolitical.
That would be weird for Chekhov, because his stories are very political.
Quite political. I'm more inclined, just because other writers around the time, in the very early 20th century, before he did like his bigger stories, like Orwell even wrote something similar that said, like, don't use a long word when a short word will do. So I think these. Yeah, they were really kind of honing in on, like, short, pithy, like, expressive statements instead of, like, long-winded, like, descriptions of, like, what the social system's like right now. I don't know.
Maybe the writing was too academic, because that is one, like, you know, if you're a writer who has come from academia, usually that comes with an assortment of bad habits that, unfortunately, you have to struggle against and beat. And some of those come with using words that are both long and dry, and there tends to be a lot of passive languages in academia, and, you know, there's certain habits that, like, you have to get around if you're from an academic background when you start writing. Usually
that's actually fascinating, because we know that Chekhov was a doctor for the most of his life until he, like, turned to writing. So maybe that's, like, grounded in that kind of, like, ivory tower, like, approach to, like, expressing yourself, right? And it's like, no, we don't need this in a short story. Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. Because if people really were thinking about writing as an intellect, especially in an age where, like, the people who are writing are the most educated people in the society, and they just want to do their little, like, intellectual treaties while they're writing. Yeah. And it could be that Chekhov's like, no, you need to actually do the story. Like, leave your intellectual treaties for later.
So number two, this one perplexes me a little, but it simply says, like, to have total objectivity. And obviously, like, we know that being objective is impossible because we're humans. So what, like, would that actually mean in writing? Because my inclination might be, like, I don't know, like, represent everything. I don't know, if it's kind of like a Hemingway approach, then it's like, you know, mount your little camera on the wall and just record dialogue and don't imply anything that, like, is going on that you can't witness. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I can see how somebody could mean that as an actual, like, showing versus telling thing, like, if in a different, like, because this is in a very different, like, cultural context, right, where, like, yeah. You're not supposed to tell people that somebody has a gambling problem. You're supposed to actually just show them do things that indicate they have a gambling problem. And I can see how somebody might think that's more objective. It does. I also wonder, do you know if he wrote, like, a lot of the older writers wrote an omniscient viewpoint?
I know that one of his most famous short stories is called The Lady with the Dog, or in other translations, The Lady with the Pet Dog. And he generally kept to a limited omniscient perspective, right? That's where you're only in the head of one of like a point of the main point of view character.
That's well, it's not omniscient, but that's limited. Limited and omniscient are actually like they are mutually exclusive.
The god view versus the human view.
But if, so he was in a limited perspective. So he has done limited.
Yes. What he did do though, like in that story that I just brought up that was quite interesting is spoilers. It's a love story. It's a short one, and at the very end you get into both of their heads at the same time, which is kind of a very like beautiful kind of shift to like show like where they were like in their relationship.
That's interesting. See, I'm just kind of amused by the idea of like Chekhov being like everything must be objective, just in context of The Cherry Orchard, which Chekhov insists was a comedy, but can be very easily staged as a tragedy and was originally staged as a tragedy, and Chekhov was really mad about it. And like, we read it both ways. It was one of my, this is one of my favorite things that I ever did in college, was when we took the play, The Cherry Orchard, and we read it as a comedy and then we like read it as a tragedy, and it can be either one with like very minor shifts in the way you read the lines.
Wow.
Oh, man, awesome.
Because it's cool, because it's either about the this buffoonish, you know, noble family that is like losing their land because they're just too stupid to keep it, or it can be about the tragedy of this family who has like who is not changing fast enough to keep up with the times and is in a world that no longer has any place for them. It's either, it's one of those two, and it is so easy to make it one or the other.
Kind of similar on this line, this next point that he said was to have, again, this word is just troublesome point for me, but he says like truthful descriptions of persons and objects. And I think if we're kind of maybe building on like The Cherry Orchard and like what his maybe intent was, if he's like, if he's writing about like, you know, Russian mujiks and peasants in like the 1850s, then, you know, he shouldn't, he's probably saying don't sugarcoat it, like they're serfs, which is akin to slavery. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I don't know how you have a truly truthful description of a person or object.
If we look as a truthful, again, it's hard to know exactly what he meant with, he's obviously responding to what other writers are doing in his time, right? And so without that contrast, it's hard. But there are definitely some times when writers come across as disingenuous.
Yeah, okay.
Like the whole, like, Anastasia Steele, the protagonist of 50 Shades. She's not pretty because her eyes are too big and too blue. that maybe something like that. I don't know.
Or like what Lovecraft sometimes does and other, like, you know, cosmic horror writers sometimes do, where they take something that is very mundane and try to make it scary with like fancy descriptions instead of taking something that is scary and making it scarier with evocative wordage. You know, like in, you know, Lovecraft in Dagon, which is mostly a good story. It's like, you know, he's trying to make this fish person scary, but the fish person's not doing anything. He's just hanging out.
he's just trying to pray
out. Right? Like, he's not being threatening or doing anything scary or anything, or aggressive even. Like, so a lot of that, like, and it was like a cyclopean menace cloaked in shadow. It's like, it's really not. It's fine, guys. It's just, don't worry about it. And it's not a problem.
Don't worry about it. Number four here we have, which we've already kind of hit on, is extreme brevity. So I assume that means don't waste words, right? Keep it short.
Yeah.
Number five, to have the story be like original and almost like audacious. And he was like, flee stereotypes. Like, try to be like, if it's short, there's a greater opportunity for like what you guys are talking about, novelty, try things out, broaden your horizons, all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I should say that the novelty is a benefit not just because you can do things that wouldn't last for an entire novel length work. It's also a benefit to writers who have ideas that are based on novelty, and that's why they're motivated to write. Like, if you find a novel new idea that you're excited about, like, it's gonna lose its luster if you write a whole novel about it. But it might last you long enough to write a short story. And so, whereas I feel like to do a novel, you have to have a deeper emotional connection to your idea that drives you to do that much work. So the nice thing about that is it also, on the writer's end, that novelty is just makes it easier to complete the story.
Although, I don't know, man. I've been told by many angry internet commenters that trying to break stereotypes is makes your work unsellable. And, like, I mean, who is this Chekhov guy anyway? Like, he was... does anyone really know who he is? Like, has his work ever been sold anywhere? I don't know, guys. I just don't know.
And the last point that I have here is, I don't know, I think it's kind of touching. It just says, be compassionate. And
that's cute.
I love that. I mean, he was certainly writing stories to kind of highlight like what was going on in Russia and like the problems and the tension between like different classes and, you know, genders and all kinds of different things. But I think that's a nice reminder that like if you're writing a very like human story to like, you know, be human, be considerate, be compassionate, be appropriate.
I think nowadays that sense, I expect, again, considering how Chekhov was clearly not a fan of those in power and the upper classes, which is why he thinks that The Cherry Orchard is a comedy, I would suspect that in modern terms, we would phrase that in modern terms as a punch up. The idea of like, yeah, you could get some laughs if you make fun of the way poor people talk, but you shouldn't do that because you know, those people are already disenfranchised. And you making fun of them is just piling on problems they already have. And I suspect that's what he meant, considering how biting a lot of his satire is towards like nobles and rulers and, mm-hmm. you know, people who are in charge of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One last thing that we could talk about from Chekhov that like other people have talked about was it's that kind of short story principle known as Chekhov's gun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Are you guys familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, right? Yeah. If there's a gun in the beginning, then it better go off by the end, right?
That gets repeated so often that to some people it's a cliche, but it is, like, a real thing. Like,
it's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, obviously it doesn't have to be exactly in the third act, and it doesn't exactly have to fire, but, like, if you make a big deal about something, and, like, it seems important, and it is not important later, the audience will be frustrated with you. They'll be like, why did you make a big deal of that if that never came up again? Why would you do that to me?
It's the whole setting expectations thing, you know, if you show a gun... clearly where people can see it, there's an expectation that that gun will be important, and you are creating that expectation, and once you create expectations, you have to follow through, and if you don't want to follow through, you have to change the expectations that you were setting in the beginning. Yeah, we had a Orinor article recently on failed foreshadowing that I think, like, kind of touched on that, sort of, because that's basically what that gun is. It's a piece of foreshadowing. It's a piece of tension foreshadowing, specifically.
Hmm.
That says that there will be trouble later that will require that gun. And that applies to, you know, short stories and to novels.
All right, so this is a little bit of a topic shift, but a weakness of short stories that I've been thinking a lot about, both in my own writing and in the writing that I see when I'm editing, is that most of us who want to write science fiction or fantasy or horror or what have you, have most of our experience coming from novels, of reading them. We read novels. And nowhere is that more apparent than in the beginning, because novels very often they start with what seems like a normal day, right, for the character, and like they spend several pages doing that, and then there's a problem. And like you can do that in a novel. That's like you spend some time setting up what things are normally like, and then the problem arrives. That is something that doesn't really work for short stories, but everyone tries to do it because we have been trained with that because we read so many more novels than we read short stories. And it's a very hard habit to break. I am certainly still working on it.
Yeah. I also think that, you know, it depends on the length of the short story because, frankly, a 2,000-word short story is still different, again, from a 10,000-word short story.
That's true,
yeah.
But I think that the longer the story is, you know, besides that, the longer it is, the slower it can kind of gear up, you know, the more you can show that normal day before something happens. I also think that because of that, the style is a little different where you can have a very sort of natural feeling like you're just in you're playing out a scene when you have a longer work and you kind of imply the things that the readers need to know and over time they sort of pick up that information. Whereas I think with the shorter the story is, the more it's important to actually have exposition in your beginning because you simply don't have time for people to catch on what they need to know slowly. You have to tell them. The key is that exposition has to be of such essential nature that it doesn't feel like, why am I being hit with this information? It has to be about the problem, about why the problem is important, about the very, like, center and core of that story. And then that's weaved in with the actual start of the story in a short story a lot of times. So because these short stories just have to, and that also applies to the end too, actually. The end of a short story versus a novel has the same thing, whereas a novel is a lot more likely to have an epilogue, have a cool down period that lasts for a while, because you spent so much time investing in the story, if you're reading a novel, that you need some time to be weaned off of it. Whereas a short story, they're much better at, like, immediately after the climax, they're just done. You don't necessarily have any epilogue at all.
And this is a sort of on a similar note. This is both kind of a pro and a con when it comes to world building in short stories. The benefit is that with a short story, you very often don't need as complex or deep a world, because you're only seeing like a tiny part of it anyway for the short story. But at the same time, if you like to have really deep, complicated worlds, that can be a problem for a short story, because like it very often it's immediately clear to the reader that there is something here they're not getting. Like, you know, if you're an author who is really attached to the idea of your fantasy being actually a post-apocalyptic setting, but your story's not about that, it's really confusing to the readers, right? Why there are these like hints of post-apocalyptic stuff going on. Whereas in a novel, you could fully explore that.
In that kind of case, do you think is it a valid like option if you're interested in gaining experience, like writing short stories, but you're also interested in building a bigger world, then is it called an anthology, right? Where you just have a bunch of short stories that are set in the same place, and they're separate stories, but they kind of paint a larger picture of what's going on. I mean, maybe a smaller, you know, less word count intensive way to like explore the world that you've set these short stories in. I don't know.
So that's definitely doable. I think it's tricky because a world, everything in a short story has to be like really focused on serving the plot, like whatever it is, like, or the intention, as Poe might say. So it is sometimes hard, in my experience, to have a world that both does that and leaves the door open for other stories that would be recognizable as being in the same world. It's certainly doable, but it is tricky. You know, it is not something that I would recommend that beginning writers try. But of course, you know, beginning writers can try whatever they want, right? But it's just not wouldn't be my recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, it might depend partly on the length of the short stories. And then with the world, it's hard because with a short story, it's almost like if you are having anything interesting about the world, it's because it is directly relevant to the short story's plot. And how much can you take your super complex world that you've built up over a long period of time and actually show just one side of it and not overwhelm readers with it? Like, if you have something like that seems on the surface to be, you have a post-apocalyptic fantasy world, for instance, but on the surface, it just seems like generic medieval fantasy. You could set a series of stories in there and only show the medieval fantasy side. And because that's a very typical type of setting, you wouldn't have to explain your world that much in the story. And so it wouldn't be overburdened. But if you had a really complex world that was very unique and original, non-standard, you know, you might still be able to get some leverage over having an audience that has, if your world is popular enough, like if you got, for instance, the Potterverse or something, you know, you've had some best-selling books, and you can rely on people already having some level of familiarity with your world, you could potentially leverage that. But it's just so easy for short stories to get weighed down by extraneous elements, especially if they get real short. And I've seen a lot of like recommendations for new writers who are writing novels to try to advertise their novels by writing like prequel or sequel short stories that have the same character in the same world. And I just generally think that it's not that it could never work, but that would be really hard and not a good way to write short stories, because they would be so weighed down by the characters in the world that were meant for a full novel-length piece. You know, if you manage to find a very simple part of the world where the rest does not need explaining, and you manage to just take two of the characters, you know, from that and no more, you know, and just show them doing a little story, it's possible. But pretty soon, the requirements of advertising and sharing a continuity with the big novel would just completely bog down the short story, and a short story can't usually afford that.
Yeah, it's also just when I have seen people do that, and it is just very difficult to have a set of characters that have a problem that is compelling enough to drive the short story, but then end the short story at a place that is both satisfying, but also has them ready to start a novel. You know, like, it's not impossible, but it is very difficult. It's just, in general, it's one of those things that I would recommend against, because it can be very obvious. It's like, oh, this doesn't really feel like a story. This feels like an advertisement for a different story that I'm not reading. And that's not a great way to endear your audience.
Yeah, like, you want to make sure you kind of end on a sense of completion. Not like, when's the next installment coming out, right?
Yeah, and so for worlds for short stories, I generally recommend look for the nearest known subgenre, you know, whether it's urban fantasy or medieval fantasy or space opera, or, look for the nearest known genre, and mostly your world is a generic version of that, unless where your plot demands it to be different. And that's pretty much, and which for some people is disappointing. They get really attached to their worlds and it's not like their worlds aren't interesting. It's just that the more complexity you have, the longer your stories about it have to be in order to pay off for all that explanation.
Yeah, and so we are running out of time here, but another thing that I think is, again, this is both a difficulty and an advantage of short stories, is, so Chris mentioned earlier that you need like tighter word craft. Like, each word has to be more valuable in a short story than it would be in a longer work. But in a way, that's actually an advantage, because if you spend, like, a lot of work, like, writing your first novel and you haven't written anything else before, the chances are that the word craft is going to be so messy that it's really not going to be useful for anything, because it's easy to do that with a novel. But if you're doing it with short stories, you have a much shorter try-fail cycle, where you write your short story and, like, you know, you get feedback on it and you tighten up your word craft and then you try again and you have to get it really tight. And then you can write your novel and have a much better idea of how to, you know, properly write your prose, so that when it's finished, you don't have this 200,000 word block of, like, unreadable prose, which is very often what a first novel looks like. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's an advantage to starting with short stories.
And if your short story isn't working, you know, if like you came up with an idea and you just can't structure a plot from it, it's not, you haven't lost that much if you just decide to dump it and move on to the next one. I speak from personal experience about it's so easy for new writers, especially since a new writer has no concept of how much story equals how many words when you write it out.
Yep.
And so they're very commonly will come up with things that are very complex and think that they can fit into a much shorter work than they actually can. And then end up with these huge projects that, you know, can bog you down for years. And I speak from personal experience with this, which, you know, if you're so attached to your story and you're willing to work on it for years, that's good. That means you have some of the follow through that's needed to actually be a writer. But it's definitely very freeing to put that first bite off more than you can chew project down and work on things you can finish for a while. It bolsters your confidence and lets you exercise your writing muscles.
And let's not forget that, of course, if it's shorter, you can have it read by your friends, or even you could work with an editor and get feedback faster and kind of ideally work towards, you know, that style and that confidence that you're looking for.
Yeah, and maybe not break the bank on your editing fees.
Yeah.
All right, well, excellent. This has been another episode of the Mythgreens podcast. We are pretty much out of time. Those of you at home, if anything that we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythgreent Podcast, opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.